But I think the thing that, again, makes me even more excited is that I think that we are going to hopefully change and bend the curve on something that, you know, as Warren Buffett has called, you know, the tapeworm on the American economy, right, on healthcare. Because let's face it, I mean, it's just not been good. Healthcare costs are the number two line item on employer budgets after salaries across the board, right? It is the number one cause of personal bankruptcies in the U.S., right? I mean, you have health insurance and then, you know, you still have to declare bankruptcy because you can't pay all of the out-of-pocket costs. Then what was the point of having it all together?
Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. What if you could hang out with high-performing executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders? Ask them about how psychedelics have impacted their self-improvement journeys. Then take an insight or two to guide your own growth. Each week, Alex Atwood takes an in-depth look at how psychedelics can increase fulfillment, solve personal problems affecting your career, and help you gain the success you seek. Alex is an executive and psychedelics coach to high performers, and his goal is to provide strategies to help you reduce conflict, bring awareness, and balance your life through the use of psychedelics. Now, here's Alex.
Dr. Jawad Arshad, welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. So today, we're going to be talking to you a little bit about your career. We want to understand a little bit about WOW Health Solutions, and we want to just understand a little bit about you. Let's start here. So you began your career as an ER physician. So what I'm thinking is, what inspired you to be on the front lines of healthcare?
Yeah, thank you so much, Alex. And thank you, first of all, for the opportunity to really talk a little bit about, you know, the inspiration and I think what really gets you and I and so many of us to sort of, you know, do more, I think, than perhaps meets the eye, right? You know, I got into the healthcare field because I come from a family that has a lot of physicians and healthcare workers, right? So when I was an undergrad in Boston, you know, it was one of those things, you know, where everyone in the family was like, hey, you know, I think maybe you're going to think about doing medicine, right? So I did my medical school up in Syracuse in New York. And gosh, in those days, you know, it seemed like life was a lot simpler. You know, all the tests we took were on paper and so on. And, you know, and I went to Syracuse in upstate New York. And while I was in medical school, I think one of the things that really attracted me to emergency medicine was this instant gratification, right? You know, so you have a patient who comes in needing something fairly quickly, and you are able to deliver it in a very short period of time. And then you kind of see the fruits of your work, so to speak, right, essentially there. Right. And though you may not see the full course of it playing out and so on, right, the patient gets admitted perhaps, or if they go home, but you really felt that gratification. So it was being able to help someone in need, I think, and then that instant gratification, and with the ability to be a little bit more hands-on in doing procedures, because emergency medicine does tend to be a bit more procedure-oriented, you know, and then still having that the medical side, you know, where you are speaking to the patient, you're kind of building a little bit of a rapport. And, you know, so I think it was sort of the combination of that milieu that really attracted me to emergency medicine.
Yeah, I can see the appeal of the immediate gratification, because people are there because it's an emergency and they need something to be done right away. And so you're able to see that impact happen. Was that, did you find yourself in high stress situations and in an environment that sort of required you to not just be compassionate, but to be quick thinking?
Yeah. So I think one of the great benefits of emergency medicine, and, you know, we tell our residents and medical students as well, even now, that you've got to keep an open mind and let the field call to you in a way, because we've had residents who have not been a good fit, right, for emergency medicine, because to your point, it is, it can be very high stressed, especially depending on the department that you work in. You know, I've always essentially worked in large departments, at least for most of my work, if I did go and maybe pick up a few shifts at a smaller department. But, you know, so if you think back, you know, in the 90s, there was a show called ER on NBC, which was, you know, so as you're going through medical school and undergrad, you know, you're watching the show, and you're like, wow, is it really like this, you know, in Cook County and in Chicago, I think it was the setting. And it can be. It's obviously not as dramatized every single moment, right? But, you know, but there are certainly times where it can be just as dramatic, just as impactful, just as stressful, right? And I think that for me personally, it fit my personality. And I think that the, once again, the ability to make a quick connection with a patient, being able to see the impact of your work, that instant gratification piece of it, and then really being challenged as well, thinking about that patient, thinking about the case, being able to manage multiple different cases simultaneously, because you never have one patient. You usually, you know, will have anywhere 5, 10, 15, even I've seen as many as 30 patients at the same time that you're managing. So, yeah, so I think so there is that intellectual curiosity and then also fulfillment that I see.
Yeah, and it takes someone special to work on those front lines and to be able to be able to deal with the stressors that you have there. And thanks for the ER reference. I'm looking at you now as like the George Clooney character on ER.
I think perhaps minus most of the drama, you know,
but plus all the good looks.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I think so I take this a little bit further from medicine to your point to the frontline work, right? And I think that we run into and, of course, have a close relationship with a lot of frontline workers, right, including our police forces, EMS, EMTs, and, you know, firefighters and so on. And I think that in some ways, we all are kind of cut from a similar cloth, right? We all sort of thrive in that needs to be done now kind of mentality, you know, taking a leadership role in a sort of a point of chaos, really, you know, and trying to make sense of it and bring some order to it. So, yeah, so I think that, you know, in that way, it is a, I think perhaps not maybe said, but I think I do feel that there is a bit of a, almost a fraternity, sorority type of a feel with all of the first responders.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're in the front lines in every sense of that term. So you mentioned earlier that early on in your childhood or as you were growing up, the family said, are we getting into medicine? So tell me a little bit about that. Like what were your passions in your childhood? And what was that like? What was your childhood like and your passions there?
Yeah, you know, so we traveled a lot when I was younger. So I came to the US when I was 12. Prior to that, my dad is a physician as well. So he had been in Northern Africa, in Europe, in Middle East. And then when I was 12, we moved to the US. So I think all of that traveling really sort of molds your thinking. I think it keeps it a bit more malleable, perhaps. So when I came to the US, we were in Cincinnati. Right. Now, this is a new country, a new environment. You know, I did my 8th and 9th grade in Cincinnati, and then we moved to New York. Right. And then once again, a big city where we're living in New York City and, you know, taking public transportation to go to high school, you know, takes about an hour and a half each way for me. And all of that that goes with being in public transportation, kind of, you know, rubbing elbows and making your room on the bus, if that's what it is, yeah. or taking the subway. You know, so I think all of these experiences give you that the ability to not really get too bothered or needing things in perfect order. Right. And I think that type of upbringing to me did make it easier, perhaps, and maybe called emergency medicine or being in the front lines and, you know, in that type of a setting as well. But, you know, otherwise, I mean, you know, we had a great childhood. I mean, you know, it was, you know, we're lucky that we had loving parents and siblings, and I had 3 sisters and, you know, who tried their best to keep me in line. And I had posters of players up in my room and so on, right? I mean, but it was pretty straightforward. But I think it was really the experiences of moving around, not being in the same environment, that really, I think, helped shape the mindset, really.
Yeah. And it's interesting that your father had gone, and in a very large way, it sounds like he was on the front lines as well, providing that medical support around the world. So that probably manifested itself in you in some ways there, and may have had an impact on you choosing that career early on.
Yeah, I think one of the big things that I took from him was the desire to do service, and medicine is a great way, right? Because not only are you able to do that service, but of course, in the US and across the world, really, you are not only respected, but you also are, well paid and compensated for it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think to me, medicine is sort of this great calling, but it's not only just, doing the good work, but also getting, fairly compensated. But it was always this desire to sort of do a bit more, right? And that's what he kind of instilled in all of us, right? That you see the world and try to leave it a little better than you found it. Right? Mm. And I think that sort of then translated for me as I was coming out of residency to take on more positions within emergency medicine, to start learning about the business of medicine, so to speak, right? And then, that really became sort of the platform to go into and think about, how do we bend the curve on the delivery of care? And then, and then that sort of is what led me into starting a company and doing different things.
And we'll get into that rewiring. Was there something that you failed at early on?
Oh, I think one of the things that I once again give my parents a lot of credit for is that though they wanted you to succeed and excel, failure was never really seen as, or failure or success for that matter, weren't really seen as the ultimate goals, right? Mm. And there were many times. I mean, I remember one time while I was in high school, I allowed one of the students to sort of look at my exam paper, and I think our teacher saw it. And he called me over and he said, both of you are going to get a zero for the test, right? Even though, of course, I wasn't doing the cheating, but I was allowing it, right? Yeah. Great, valuable lesson, right? I came home, I remember I told my parents, and they didn't really sugarcoat it. And they weren't really like, oh, we're going to talk to the teacher or whatever. They were like, okay, well, I guess you'll have to live with the consequences. We hope, this doesn't ruin it for you, but good luck. So I think, we always knew that like our parents were there, but they weren't going to kind of step up and sort of take over the situation. And they were just really going to let you kind of roll with the punches. Which really has been an amazing thing for me.
That's right. Experience is non-transferable. And you getting that experience shifted how you looked at that. So thank you. So what were you most proud of before you founded WOW? What were some accomplishments that you were really, really proud of?
Yeah, I think, of course, you're always proud of, of your family, of your educational accomplishments. But I think one of the things that I really got involved with early on, there were two things. One was that my residency director, Chris Lewandowski at Henry Ford, where I trained at, he told me, he said, look, if you expect to do anything in life that is beyond what everyone else is doing, expect to do it for free, at no cost, and on your own time, right? And I think that was a really great lesson, because when I came out of residency and started working with an ER group here in Metro Detroit, I had a lot of opportunities that came up. And I am convinced that most of them were only because I was willing and able to do them at no cost, time or monetary, right, to someone else. And because I was really looking at them as, as growth opportunities, right? And I always kind of think about that I think he made it very sort of clear, right, that just plan to do it for your own self and for your growth, and don't expect something in return. So I think so, you know, but when you ask me, you know, what is it that I was really proud of before getting into entrepreneurship and so on, it was really around service. So I got involved with a lot of nonprofits in Metro Detroit area. You know, we got involved with rebuilding a couple of neighborhoods in the Metro Detroit market as well. As you know, back in about 15, 20 years ago, Detroit downtown especially was not well taken care of, as had been the case for a lot of our urban centers. So I think so that was an opportunity for us to sort of rebuild, buying some of the dilapidated homes, rebuilding them and so on. So, you know, so I think it was that service aspect that really I was most proud of.
Yeah. And that relates back to the advice that you received, right? Be willing to do something and not receive any monetary compensation, and possibly not even receive acknowledgement, right? It's not about the acknowledgement. It's about the service.
Yeah, absolutely. and so I tell my kids now, right, that you know, this is the great dilemma in a way, right, of a philanthropist, so to speak, because once you receive acknowledgement, you have a way of letting it seep in your mind that you know, oh, maybe I'll do a little bit more next time and I'll get more acknowledgement, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And all of a sudden it's muddy.
That's right. And those endorphins, they're the compensation from the acknowledgement. But they come just by doing the service, right? I mean, those endorphins and that serotonin release doesn't just come from acknowledgement. It really comes from providing the service. So, okay, let's cut to a bit more recent. So what inspired you to establish WOW?
Yeah, you know, so I was really lucky. I grew up on the administrative side of medicine, right? With my employer, they were really great about paying for a lot of my non-medical or business-related education. But then I think when I was there, what I started thinking and realizing is that I really have no insight into what my patients are going through when they come and see me. When you come into the emergency room, your doctors don't know if you are a paying customer or not, or how are you going to pay the bill or what have you. You know, and I was really interested in kind of being more involved and learning about that delivery of care model, right? So I started a clinic. I left my corporate job, so to speak, and started a clinic and became a provider who was directly interfacing with the community on a day-to-day basis. So we would have patients come in, and one thing that became amply clear early on, right, was that we were all blind to how the money moved, right? As a patient, when our patients would come, they didn't actually have any idea how much that episode of care was going to cost them. They didn't know if how much that office visit, that medication, that lab, whatever it was that we were suggesting that they needed to get, was going to actually end up costing them. Because, you know, there's a lot of terms, your copay and deductible and co-insurance and so on, that kind of hide the costs, and you know, you become aware of them with time. Right? Yeah. And then on the other side of the equation, as providers, I couldn't tell my patient that, hey, you know, this is what you should get. But, and he says, well, you know, how much is this going to cost me? And my answer always was, I don't really know, you know, you know. So that just seemed really odd, I think, in a way. And, you know, as you're sort of reading through a lot of the things and looking at globally at society, right, you're like, yeah, you know, I think this is a problem. So we need to try to figure out a better solution and a better fix for it.
Yeah. It's almost accepted as the way that it is, right? It's hard to follow the trail.
Yeah. Right? You know, and of course, I mean, we are trying to understand something that has transpired over 25, 30 years, right? So many times, you know, things were kind of put into place, which at the moment may have been a good idea, or they were going to serve the purpose of someone, right? Some stakeholder, but wasn't good for the overall good of the community, right? Or of the system, right? So we're talking about delivery of care, you know, who benefits in it and who should really have control. Well, I mean, I understand, you know, if the insurance carrier is paying for that office visit, is paying for that lab, you know, then they're going to want to have a say, right? They are a stakeholder. And then, of course, the patient is a stakeholder. And then, of course, the provider, the physician, is also a stakeholder, right? They are communicating directly with their client, with their patient. So you have sort of this tri-party, right, involvement in every medical encounter. The problem is that the patient and the provider are actually there, right? So then they have to justify their actions to the third party that holds all the money, but is not present. So you have to somehow relay back everything that happened, but you can't tell me in a prose form what happened. You can't send me a dictation. You got to turn it into codes, right? So that our computer can read it. <laughs> You know? <laughs> So I think this is, you know, so it started off as perhaps not a nefarious activity, but ended up feeling like becoming one by the end, because it was just like, you know, you're trying to justify your codes so that you could get paid for the work that was being done. You know, so I think it was a bit of a devolutionary process, like I call it, you know, instead of improving, it just keep devolving.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember as a child, I would see medical transcriptionists at work at home positions and all sorts of positions that were created just based on the complexity and the multi-layers of this whole process that you're describing, this triad that really is just systemically difficult, if not broken. Wow. Very, very interesting. So what was something that you found to be more challenging than you expected? Was it something in this realm that we're talking about now?
It is. I think, and broadly speaking, it's change. You know, what you realize is that you can have the most perfect solution, right? But it is really difficult for people to grapple their mind around change, right? We all want things, even when they are not in our favor, to not change, right? So I wrote a blog one time, you know, about the Stockholm syndrome, right? Almost that consumers in healthcare have with their insurance card, right? Because the consumers in healthcare are really patients and then perhaps employers. Because let's face it, about half of the U.S. population that does have some kind of healthcare coverage is getting it from their employer. Mm-hmm. The other half is somehow government-sponsored, either through Medicare or perhaps Medicaid enrollment and so on. You know? So I think when you think about the consumer community, you know, they also are the losers in this. So your employers, because every year the premium goes up, they have really no minimal insight into how their money is being spent, how that product that they're providing is actually, you know, making an impact. They know they need to provide a benefit. They just don't know what the value of that benefit is. I learned that really interestingly in our own group, because as a medical practice owner, I was also a small employer. So I was buying healthcare benefits for our group. And a couple of years in, I thought to myself, I was like, gosh, you know, this like our yearly renewal rates keep going up every year. I don't really even know if our employees appreciate it. You know, so I always had this thing in my mind that a benefit not taken is a benefit really not provided, right? So in one of our staff meetings, I said, hey, you know, everyone, if we drop health insurance as a benefit, and just understand we're not doing it for financial reasons only, we just don't know if you're finding value in this. So instead of providing you with healthcare benefits, we'll just give all of you the same amount of money that we're putting towards healthcare benefits, right? How many of you are okay with that, right? And we had a unanimous vote, right? Everyone said, oh, yes, right? And that was really an aha moment. And I was like, oh my God, we were like spending like $300 or $350 or something like that per employee per month, paying for our portion, like 80% of the premium that we were paying. And no one was really seeing the value in it. You know, and they would have rather had that money in their paycheck. So I think that was before I got into healthcare benefit space, before I really started Wow Health. But, you know, but it was these sort of really pivotal occurrences in your life, right? That you're like, oh, wait a minute, maybe others are in the same boat, right? Maybe other employees aren't really seeing the value and perhaps are not really understanding the cost of that value to their bottom line, to their paycheck.
Yeah. And giving employees an option gives them access to something they didn't even know was available. So a lot of the times employees just assume whatever healthcare plan is available, it's whatever, however rigid it is, and however it doesn't work for their lifestyle, it is what it is. It isn't really, they don't see it as being the monetary value or appreciate that the way that the company does, right? And so why pay for and why receive healthcare that you don't use and frankly may not fit your lifestyle or your needs? It makes total sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when we look at, so there, you hear about, for example, wage stagnation, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I tell everyone, look, there's no wage stagnation, okay? Employers are consistently putting more money per employee every year towards their remuneration. The problem is that all of that money that they allocate towards going to your paycheck just gets eaten up by the increase in healthcare cost, you know? And then the other problem is that most employees don't have much insight into the cost of that care either, you know? So then it feels like, well, you know, I was making the same amount of money 5 years ago, you know, I have really had no wage increase without realizing that, yeah, you know, I mean, your wage has been increasing. It's just that all of that increase keeps getting siphoned off towards healthcare. So I think it's these thoughts, right, that really bring you to the mindset that I had thinking about, wow, health, there's got to be an alternative that's better than this.
Right? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a system that's clearly broken. Have you seen the industry in terms of healthcare solutions? And obviously telemedicine has grown exponentially, especially since the pandemic, but how have you seen it shift since your time in the ER and even through your time at WOW?
Yeah, I think there have been some really large, almost paradigm type shifts that have taken place. I remember when I started, when I came out of medical school, started practicing medicine in the clinical setting 20-ish plus years ago, we saw that patients didn't really care or didn't really have much insight into copay deductible kind of a issue. The deductibles used to be really small, those for those people who had insurance and so on. That, of course, became really apparent and became a big deal over the last, I would say, at least 7, maybe 10 years, right? As we saw the cost of that increase really started to skyrocket for various different reasons, you know. So I think if the shift in the consumer mentality, it is not unusual for us to see a patient where the patient will actually just come out and say it, hey, you know, how much is this thing going to cost me, right? Because they were stung once before. You know, or this is a little technical, right? But, you know, I've had patients who've told me, we tell them, hey, you know, you're going to be admitted overnight to the hospital, but in what's called observation status, right? And they'll say, oh, no, don't put me there as an observation status if you're not going to put me in as an inpatient, right? They clearly have had an experience where they were put in as an observation status, which technically is considered outpatient, and then they got stuck with the whole bill. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I think there were all these complexities that we were seeing coming up. And then I think there has been, and I give a lot of credit to some great advisors, benefit advisors out there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, who have sort of been beating the drum a bit about changing the paradigm of care, really informing and their clients, the employer community, their employees, that you know, it's not going to be as straightforward as just showing up and showing your card and thinking that you have not just taken on a fairly large financial responsibility.
Yeah, right? Yeah, complete. Well, as an employer, especially in a post-pandemic world, I've always seen medical expenses as a primary cost driver for hiring new employees and ensuring that, you know, the plans that you have in place are an equal balance of, you know, cost effectiveness for the company, depending upon the size, and giving access to the employees. And that's a difficult trick. I've actually personally noticed that more employees are very cognizant now of their coverage. They go through and they read, you know, to the fine print what their coverage entails, and they look at optional plans. And frankly, there aren't many to choose from in the landscape now. The ecosystem is very thin. And so it's to have a transparent and to have learning happening in the medical field, especially for the hourly workforce, especially for the folks that a copay or a deduction, even if an employer is covering up to 80% or more, it still is an impact depending upon the amount of money you make. And, you know, one of the most important things in life, if not the most important thing in life, is your health, right? And your healthcare.
Right.
And that was, you know, that was a, there was a huge spotlight there in the pandemic. So I'm curious. So what was an insight that you received as an entrepreneur who is clearly solving a circumstance, a challenge that is perplexing the industry now? What was an insight that you had as an entrepreneur moving through this sort of disruptive space where you have so much rigidity and bureaucracy within this triad that you described? What was your biggest challenge as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think the first thing to me was really changing the mindset, not only for myself, but those that you are communicating and working with to bring about that change. I thought to myself that, you know, healthcare, though different, we totally understand it's a very personal experience. When you are sick, you really do want to get the best care and so on. But the question was, has a similar, not necessarily apples to apples, but has a similar challenge been solved or at least addressed more effectively? So I looked at the insurance market and I said, you know, what about homeowners insurance? What about car insurance, right? A car in a mechanical way is perhaps maybe a little bit like me, right? I mean, it needs sort of ongoing maintenance and then, you know, God forbid, every now and then it can get into an accident and then it can be really bad. And how do we address those possibility and eventualities, right? And really what we do is we've decided that, you know, for our routine maintenance, your tire changes, your oil changes, your radiator flush, whatever it may be, you're going to pay for that out of pocket because that's going to bring you the most transparency, choice, and control over that decision. However, if God forbid, you know, you get into an accident and, you know, that is significant, then you should have something in place, car insurance, right? That then will kick in. But, you know, to make sure that, you know, you are not just going to sort of get that service involved right away, you're going to have to pay something out of pocket, a deductible or what have you, right? And if you look at your car insurance deductibles, you know, they are fairly reasonable, usually $500,000 maximum for most places, you know. But you see, the premium for your car insurance doesn't really rise. If anything, personally, mine has gone down, and especially there's competition in the industry that is well understood and so on. So I said, you know, can we apply the same principles to healthcare as well, right? So can we think about healthcare? And, you know, so from a physician standpoint now, I know that majority of what I need, majority of my patients need, is really in what we call the everyday care realm, right? You're going to the doctor, you may be taking your child to the pediatrician, you know, you're going for your wellness exam, your labs, your maybe your screening mammogram, right? All of these things are, you know, sort of maintenance and not something that needs to be done on the at the drop of the hat. It's not an emergency, right? And for those things, I should have do the same thing as I do perhaps with my car, right? I can shop around, I can see where can I go, what's most cost effective, and who's the best provider. And that best provider is sort of an intersection of price and availability and distance that I have to travel. You know, so if I think of it in those terms, can I take care of those episodes by just paying directly? So statistically, we know that about 85 to 90% of events in healthcare fall into this category, right? You're getting your blood pressure medication, you're going to the dentist for your dental cleaning, whatever, right? So this is all sort of maintenance care. Only about 10, maybe maximum 15% of the events fall into what would be considered large medical needs. You know, I have to go to the ER, I need significant surgery, I need to be hospitalized for some reason. God forbid I get diagnosed with cancer, I need chemo treatment, right? Whatever that may be. So I said, you know, then that really opened up my thinking, honestly. And, you know, I started looking and I said, you know, are there providers out there who would be interested in just getting paid direct at the time of service for their services? And it turned out, yeah, there is an amazing community of medical providers across the board, if it's lab providers or imaging providers, physicians, dentists, vision clinics, all kinds of stuff that really is looking also to perhaps diversify, if not break away completely from that third-party reimbursement model where they have to convert their interaction into codes, send it to some faceless entity, hope that they are going to accept it, which majority of the time they won't, and they'll deny it initially. Then you have to rework the claim, right? Wait about 60 days before the money actually arrives, right? Can I save myself all of that hassle? By some numbers, you know, about half of the revenue that a medical practice brings in is lost in these what's called collection activities. I've got to hire a biller. I've got to have an EMR. I have to spend my time fixing my claims and that get rejected, being on the phone, getting pre-authorizations, right? You know, all of these things kind of fall into that bucket, which takes up about half of the revenue for a medical practice, right? So can, in exchange for being paid at the time of service with transparency by my consumer, which is the patient, can I extend a better discount, right? And so that's exactly what we found, that we didn't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, we can take the existing infrastructure and really help leverage it. And that's where WOW Health comes in. So we'll talk a little bit about how we address that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to hear about it. It's a system that is clearly broken, and there's really no winners. Maybe the insurance company who gets to deny claims and keep cash flow moving. But aside from that, that's not the essence of healthcare. That's not the essence of support and service. Absolutely not. And it's ripe for disruption. So yeah, so let's talk a little bit about WOW a little bit. How are you guys solving this problem?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that I came to accept, right, is that the traditional model, the current model, is doing exactly what it was meant to do, right? It is meant to maximize shareholder profits. And in doing so, you know, there are different attitudes and processes that are put into place. And we've allowed it to happen. Let's face it, as consumers, really, we do have the power, right? So we can demand change, though change is difficult, right? So I think, so that's the first realization. The second was that, as I mentioned, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. I think we have seen some failures really by very large names, right? The largest online retailer in the US, right, has attempted to fix the healthcare conundrum a few times and not succeeded. And in my opinion, that's because you're trying to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to set up clinics that only take a particular type of employee or consumer. We can. So what our goal at WOW Health was that we were going to try to become that uniform platform where any provider of healthcare service can come and list their service and expect to be paid directly when they dispense that service, right? Because, you know, as a consumer, if I may be coming in and I need to see the doctor today, well, okay, great. I have, there are groups out there that are in this direct pay model and I can pay directly for that. But what happens if like 3 months from now, I need to go see a dentist? Do I need to then find another provider community or group, right, that's going to be able to take care of that? And then what happens 3 months after that when I am told I need an MRI? Then how do I go about finding another imaging service provider now? And then, like, what if I need my yearly physical labs, right? So I think our goal at WOW Health was to kind of be that, the connector, right? Because we know there is a great community of direct pay providers out there. We just want to put all of them onto the same platform so that our consumers, the patients, can find their services with ease. And really, we focus a lot on the user interface and the user experience, right? The patient experience, the patient interface. So on the back end, there are a myriad of connections and information being pulled from different groups and so on, right? But to the patient to the consumer, it all is the same interface. It looks always the same. The color scheme's the same, right? It's fairly comforting to know, okay, well, you know, if I need to make a dental appointment, this is how it's going to look. And it's going to look exactly the same if I need to go see a doctor. And then it's going to look the same if I need to make an appointment for an imaging test. And by the way, it's going to be the same interface if I need to connect with a physician via telemedicine, right? Mm. So that's been our team, and that we've really, I think, done really well with, right? We've gotten about 350,000 medical practices for our consumers to be able to pick from nationwide, right? We've got about 250,000 dental practices. We've got about 100,000 vision clinics. We've brought in a great pharmacy program that's accepted at over 65,000 pharmacies. We've got a great telemedicine program, right? But as you can tell, we didn't really try to build this ourselves. All we did is go out and find these partners, you know, bring them into this ecosystem thing. It's an open marketplace still. Anyone else can join, but now at least we have built a critical mass to give comfort to the consumer that, yeah, you know, if I need something, I will be able to get it. Because I think that's been one of the big challenges in a lot of these movements. You know, yeah, I can maybe make an appointment with a doctor down the street, but what if I am traveling and I'm down in Florida and I don't have an insurance card, then what will happen?
Yeah.
No, I was just saying that it's going to end with that it's giving that peace of mind to the consumer.
Yeah. So if I'm an employer and I am interested in giving the money back to my employees, how do I engage with WOW Health?
Yeah, so we have a great website. It's mywowhealth.com, MYWOWHEALTH, right? Mywowhealth.com. There is a section for employers. There is a section for direct to consumers as well, because of course, you know, the larger the ecosystem, the larger the community that we can build, the more it will benefit our providers. And so it's a virtuous cycle that then ends up the more providers we have, the more benefit that our consumers end up getting from choice, from competition, and so on, right? That comes. So employers can come in. We provide them with customized packages. So you may say, hey, you know, I am really interested. Maybe I have a lot of gig workers. Maybe I have a lot of part-time workers, right? And I want to maybe provide something that's in the $10 a month range. What can I get? Well, for $10 a month, you know, you can bring them discount access. So, you know, they're going to pay $5 a month for that. You'll get access to our medical practices, to labs, imaging. And then the other $5 a month, you can allow your employee, your gig worker, or your 1099, because remember, it's not an insurance plan. This is voluntary. So there's no employer-employee relationship necessarily, right? You may be just giving it as reward money for working with your platform, perhaps, or with your business to an independent contractor, right? Especially with the flourishing and growth of gig workers. I think, that really addresses that gap, you know, and then they can decide, the consumer, your worker can decide, you know, do I want to use that money towards getting a membership for telemedicine so I have access to a doctor all the time? Do I want to spend that $5 towards a pharmacy program because I have high blood pressure and diabetes? You know, and by the way, just because you gave $10 doesn't mean that I can't get more benefits. I'll just pay for it myself in that case. Or in the case of some employers, they'll say, oh, you know, you send us what the over amount is and we'll just payroll deduct it, right? Mm-hmm. So it still feels very much like an employer-sponsored benefit, but it's a defined benefit. It's a defined contribution. I know that I'm putting in $10 a month. If we go over, the employee's paying for it. So I think it can really help with budgeting, right? Especially in this really challenging labor market, right? You know, it can become a great tool for recruitment and retention as well. You know, so I think it can be a really win-win financially, and then of course providing the benefits that are meaningful.
Absolutely, and it occurs to me this is almost like you've come full circle. So you started as an ER to be able to be on the front lines, to see the impact, to change things a bit, right? And now here you are, tangentially related, but now you're fixing and you're solving and you're giving that power back to the people that need it. Now you're going to be able to see that impact you know, right away in people being, you know, having transparent healthcare and people having access to the healthcare that they actually need and understanding, hey, this is my money. This is my energy that I'm putting in to this particular program or what have you, it, on the employer and on the worker end. So it's great that you're doing this. It's inspiring. And thank you for disrupting something that needs to be disrupted, whether you're an employer, whether you're an employee, whether you don't have healthcare, your health is number one. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Yeah. So last couple of questions. I'm curious specifically around you. So what are you curious about right now? What's something that really kind of gets you going, right?
Yeah. You know, I think right now, one of the things that really excites me is seeing that change that we were talking about, people kind of understanding, you know, that, you know, I should have more visibility, shouldn't I? You know, I should have some better understanding of how I'm going to get my care and where I'm going to get it, right? So I think we're seeing that mindset change take place. So I think that's really exciting because when I started getting into the healthcare benefit space and learning really from so many people who've been so kind with their time and generous, you know, in teaching me that, right, you're seeing that real turn, right? So we are seeing that, you know, there are large businesses that are looking at this and saying, yeah, you know, we need to come up with a better solution. So I think so that's the piece that really makes me excited. Mm. But I think the thing that, again, makes me even more excited is that I think that we are going to hopefully change and bend the curve on something that, you know, as Warren Buffett has called, you know, the tapeworm on the American economy, right? on healthcare, because let's face it, I mean, it's just not been good. Healthcare costs are the number two line item on employer budgets after salaries across the board, right? It is the number one cause of personal bankruptcies in the U.S., right? I mean, you have health insurance and then, you know, you still have to declare bankruptcy because you can't pay all of the out-of-pocket costs. So then what was the point of having it all together, you know? So I think kind of, you know, addressing and coming up with a solution to create that positive disruption, I think is really exciting.
Wow. So exciting. So exciting. Thank you so much. I have a question that's going to get your mind thinking a little bit, but so, yeah. So if you had a theme song, a song that came on every time you walked into a room and everyone could hear it, what would your theme song be?
Gosh, you know, I am terrible at music. and my kids always tell me that you are like, you're not even really living in this world because you don't know any of the songs, you know. But I think that, you know, broadly speaking to me, really honestly, like anything that brings a positive vibe, right? I think because that's what we do have to be, right? Yeah. Even when things are difficult, we just recently, unfortunately, had Hurricane Ian come through and we see so many people being affected and who will continue to be affected down the road, right? Mm-hmm. Including so many Floridians because of what's going to happen to homeowners insurance, how many of the insurance. So I think that, you know, positivity is really important because that's the only thing that allows us to continue struggling, right? And trying to make things better. Without it, too many of us, you know, would just throw up our hands and give up. And that's just not going to solve anything.
No. And so I'll give
I didn't answer your question because nope. I couldn't, but
it's okay. But, I'll answer it for you.
But hopefully others, everyone who's listening will think of something that's positive, right? That's upbeat.
I'll think of something. Right. How about don't worry, be happy.
Yeah, there you go.
Be happy.
Be happy. Yeah.
There you go.
You know, because I think that's the mindset we've got to be in.
Thank you so much. Dr. Jawad Arshad, thank you for changing the way that people look, think about healthcare. Having these type of solutions, especially for the frontline workers, the essential workers, the hospitality workers, the folks that, you know, have so much risk of health issues and injury just by nature of their job and their lifestyles, to give them access to something that they can actually touch and feel that they have control over is something that is a positive thing. And I'm looking forward to watching you disrupt this industry that is in so much need of it. So thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you so much, Alex. Really appreciate the opportunity and love to hear from our audience and with their input and feedback as well.
Oh, absolutely. And if you're interested in learning more about Dr. Arshad or about WOW Healthcare Solutions, please click on the link that's there in the bio. And we're looking forward to big and new and exciting things. Onward and upward.
Thank you so much, Alex. Great speaking with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening in to The Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at The Alchemist Lounge.